right there.
Work hard, play hard. Welcome to Work It Out with Mercy Quay. Thank you for joining us today on our show today to talk about what they do for work, at work, and what keeps them motivated to work. We have joining us Issa Mujahid and Kamel Scott Mujahid to talk about what they're doing for work. Just go ahead and start us off. You guys co-founded the CT Core Organize Now. What is that? What should we know about it?
Well, one thing I would say, because Issa's been very generous with credit and has like often credited me with as a co-founder, but really all the credit for that goes to Issa. He founded CT Core back in January. I'm sure you can talk about that. And I January of 2016, and I joined that fall partly because I was really inspired by what I saw Issa doing.
Mm-hmm. What about you,
Issa? CT Core is community organizing for racial equity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kamel and I both have been organizing and involved in organizing for a long time, both kind of professionally as like paid organizers and also in our own time, as I like to say. That's how we met. And so I do attribute co-founding of CT Core to Kamel, because years prior to its founding, you know, we had a number of conversations about how we wanted to do the work, and kind of had this idea about, you know, creating an organization maybe one day. And so there was an opportunity in last January for me to take the leap with Kamel and our family support. And so that wouldn't have happened without kind of everyone being all in. And it's very much a family venture and a community venture. It's really kind of core to how we do our work. It's about being really rooted in our community, centered in our community, and thinking about what type of communities we want to have going forward. And when I say community, I don't mean kind of how it's, you know, usually used. It's kind of, we're doing work in the community, which is great, but it's really about thinking about what that word means to us in terms of liberation. How does community and liberation kind of go together? And one of the components of that kind of liberated community. And so, you know, we do organizing as kind of like organizing is usually thought of. We do mobilizing, we do direct action around a number of issues. We just released our platform the weekend prior at our fall conference, just kind of outline a bunch of our priorities, which we're going to be developing and organizing a policy agenda for kind of out of that for 2018. But an emerging component of our work, which is really, really important, I think, is the development of community visioning, community care, community building, which is really a forward thinking about beyond the dismantling of structural racism. What is it that we're trying to build, and how can we materially actually build it?
Right. So, I mean, you said earlier, and I kind of want to touch on this, you said you decided to take the leap. And so the show I'm trying to mold out, really happening in real time before your eyes, is to dive into what motivates people in a particular direction, what gets people to ditch a 9-to-5 that they might have been working for X amount of years and go into their own direction, following their passions and doing what they get worked up about. So when you said take the leap, what did you mean by that? Like, what was the leap like for you?
It was just kind of a culmination of a lot of things. So I was, my first organizing job was the early 2000s, and I did that for a number of years, and then I got burnt out, and then I took a 9-to-5 with the Bridgeport Health Department, but continued to organize kind of in my own time for another number of years. So organizing politics, definitely something that, you know, I caught the bug and it wasn't going anywhere. And so after that, really wanted to get back into a full time So took another full-time paid organizing job and did that for a number of years. And then kind of towards the last year or so of that position, this, you know, the conversations that I mentioned, Kamel and I started, you know, having about how we wanted to do the work, what barriers around like kind of our personal priorities and drives and approaches to the work existed within the institutions we were working in. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I was kind of like thinking about bouncing around from job to job, kind of looking for that great fit. But I knew kind of came to a realization, like I was never going to find that fit, within another organization, because there was really like so much that I wanted to do. And it was kind of pretty particular about what that looked like. Mm-hmm. And also like looking at some of the needs that I saw in organizing around Connecticut, especially around racial equity and racial justice, mm-hmm. that there needed to be something new built. And so one of the last paid gigs I had was with Faith Acts for Education in Bridgeport. Mm. And I was really inspired by their story. Mm-hmm. Their executive director is a young Black woman. Mm-hmm. Their board, some Black pastors from Bridgeport.
Yep, yep.
And that was an essential component to kind of like what I felt I was drawn to was mm-hmm. really kind of Black-led equity work, word. Justice work. And mm-hmm. so I took a lot of inspiration, not only inspiration from the founding of Faith Acts and learning that story, but I learned a lot about how to start an organization yeah. by hearing their story. Mm-hmm. And so that actually kind of seeing that they could do it and that it could be done by some, you know, people of color, Black folks who are inspired to lead this work on their own terms, mm-hmm. Kind of gave me the confidence because I had the vision to kind of go out there and make it happen. And, you know, Kamel and I being in the work for a while have built some relationships and some access to resources. Mm-hmm. And it was time to kind of, you know, put that in service of our vision. And a lot of folks, we were fortunate, kind of latched onto it pretty early. And we were able to get a lot of support mm-hmm. In terms of institutional support from mm-hmm. other organizers and directors that yeah. we have relationships with, funding support eventually. And tons of community support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Kamel, you were, before you took the leap into, you know, Issa said it, so I'm going to say it, co-founder.
I might have to just own that.
Right. Before you took the leap, you were at Perrin?
Yes, mm-hmm. I was working at the Perrin Foundation, which, you know, I always kind of describe as like a cushy foundation job. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it was, you know, working in a foundation is nice. Like you get, there's a lot of stability. What I loved about it too was that, you know, being really passionate about community change work and understanding that a lot of the people that I love and am close with are organizers who are doing amazing work but don't have access to resources. So, as you know, for many years I had been wanting to, you know, support people by showing up to their events and, you know, if people wanted to talk about how to make this thing, you know, like sort of draw on my experience, like offering that to folks, but never had really substantial resources yeah. to pass off to people. So it was yeah. great to be able to work with an organization that was committed to resourcing organizing, specifically youth organizing, and to be able to actually get resources to people who really needed it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, I say my transition out of the Perrin Foundation felt like a calling more than, you know, sort of, you know, it's time to get out of here. You know, I need to, you know, go on and do something else. I had this moment where I realized that I was supposed to be doing something different. And, mm-hmm. I have not figured out yet how to tell the story without it sounding rambling, but, bear with me for a second. So I had, there was an incident of police brutality that happened in New Haven, and I got involved with the organizing pretty early on and noticed folks who were involved in the organizing in different capacities asking me questions about sort of, you know, so how do you do this? And am I doing this right? And, you know, can you provide some support and advice? And I realized, you know, that had been kind of a theme for the last few years of people, you know, doing this really great work and often, you know, just, you know, not realizing like, you know, that they actually have this and yeah. don't necessarily need a lot of help, but also just there not being a lot of training. You know, a lot of organizers in Connecticut are going to New York or going to California, going to Chicago. I was trained in Chicago as an organizer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having an organizing training in Connecticut that is also, you know, centered in the experiences and wisdom of the Black community and our ancestors who have been fighting for justice in this country for hundreds of years. So there's tons to draw on, was just something that felt like it was really necessary and really timely. And so, you know, it started actually as me trying to think about, okay, so how can I, you know, if we're doing this work, like, who could I draw on, or like what resources could we draw on to create some space for training and some support, and you know, who would want to come into this work? And I actually it actually came from a conversation with a friend of mine where I was saying, you know, somebody needs to come in and do this, but I don't think I'm the one to do it. And she was like, well, it's funny, like, what if everybody's thinking that? And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, well, what if everybody's thinking that they're not the one? And I was like, I just had this moment where I was like, what? And I went home and I just sort of thought about that for hours. And I sat down and I got a notebook and I started writing down like names of people, organizations who I thought were involved, like would be interested in this, and resources that we could draw on and all this stuff. And at the end of it all, like without really even, you know, Googling anything off the top of my head, came up with a list of potential funding sources that was huge. And there was a ton of resources. And I was like, am I supposed to do this?
Like, maybe I am.
I was like, I can do this. Like, this is here. And I have these relationships, and it's time for also for there to be a push. And something that also, you know, and just to speak to what Issa was saying about the importance of creating space and holding space for Black-led work and Black-led organizing. There is a real lack of Black-led organizing in Connecticut, and where there is Black-led organizing, because it does exist, it's often incredibly powerful, deep work that's happening, but it tends to fly under the radar, not because the people doing it aren't amazing, but because people are not seeing and recognizing that work. They're not getting the same access to resources. I mean, we've struggled with that ourselves, but have benefited from, you know, having years and years of relationship building to help us kind of get over that hump. And, you know, to be able to access the resources to allow you to build the thing, to build the reputation so that people will invest in you, is an amazing privilege that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
part of that work is also, how do we build up our organization so that we're able to share those resources with others and connect others with the resources, which, you know, at this point, you know, connecting others with resources is easier than sharing resources, because we're not getting it to that extent be handing it out. But you know, our work is also just really about building collectively, there's a quote that just came out from Issa Rae that I think is really like poignant about building with your peers. You know, she said, you know, when people are trying to get ahead in the industry, often they want to go to Tyler Perry or somebody who's up there who's doing it and get their attention so that they will put you on and like help you to build your career. And, you know, anybody who knows about like Issa Rae's story, you know, has seen, you know, she actually walks the talk. Like, she built with the people who are around her, people she went to college with, her friends, you know, doing YouTube videos, if you know, Misadventures of an Awkward Black Girl is a personal favorite, and made that happen. And it was super low budget, but it caught on. She wrote a book, and now she has an HBO series.
Right.
Now, that's not going to be everybody's story. Like, that's a unique story.
I mean, Issa Rae is definitely an example.
There's a lot to learn from it. And even just about, let's reach out to the people around us. Let's pool our resources and see if we can create something and then access those larger resources if possible. But there's a whole lot that we can do. And there's a lot of capacity that exists in our community if we unite and if we see our success as bound up in the success of others.
Oh, that's really good. I like that last line.
I think that's key. And I think like there's something to be said for the value of authenticity and also the need to preserve authenticity in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, building from your peers out kind of gives you that space to kind of like hold your work kind of grounded in that kind of authentic who you are, who your community is. And I think, you know, again, it's not going to be everyone's experience, but I think if you're able to do that, and then your work can, or your art or whatever it is that you're trying to build, can kind of grow in that kind of authentic space. Those who typically like have resources will recognize that and tend to value that. And then, you know, I think there's, you know, danger of like, how they want to invest or potentially like co-opt that. Mm-hmm. But again, I think building, insulating yourself with your peers, this might kind of sound a little abstract, but like can provide some fortification, I think, from mm-hmm. some level of like co-optation.
Right.
Is that a word?
Co-optation? Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
I mean, you asked me.
Yeah. But that also, as Kamel was talking about like that concept, kind of reminded me of a conversation I had a couple weeks ago with a friend of mine who's also a young Black, kind of politically active individual who's been like in this work for a long time and is entrepreneurial. And we were talking about like CT Corps, which, you know, fortunately we're like enormously like grateful for how much it has grown, especially mm-hmm. this year, our mm-hmm. second year. And we're talking about the trajectory of CT Corps. And I was saying, like, in the beginning, like, CT Corps was really a vision. And a lot, it didn't have a track record, you know, for our first 6 months of, like, CT Corps doing this thing organizing-wise. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it was built off of, like, who I am personally. And that's okay.
And what your network was personally.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was kind of like our personal, professional mm-hmm. network within like politics and organizing. There's a lot of, because we're working for our lives, there's a lot of kind of overlapping and intersecting mm-hmm. and professional and personal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, we were fortunate immediately, like folks latched onto it, but they were kind of latching onto their belief in me as an organizer because of prior relationships mm-hmm. and that vision mm-hmm. that, okay, you know, we know who Issa is, we know what he's about. So this idea is probably a great idea based on what I know about him. Mm-hmm. And like, that's not something that we should like shy away from. Like, it's okay to have folks invest in us,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what you're doing, whether it's a for-profit selling some type of product or art or community organizing, that authenticity and people kind of really having faith in you is something that you should kind of anchor to the degree that you can, your ability to draw support, whatever mm-hmm. that support looks like, whether mm-hmm. it's community support, community, like financial resources, et cetera. Yeah.
Before we dive back into support mm-hmm. and your network, you're listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay on WNHH Radio, broadcasting at 103.5 FM and live streamed at www.npr.org. Mm-hmm. www.newhavenindependent.org. Today's guests are Issa Mujahid and Kamel Scott Mujahid, who are also engaged in... I mean, I've been to a couple of your sessions, and to me, while trying to build out this platform, it feels like, I mean, you said it, holding space for ourselves. And, mm-hmm. and a lot of times, and maybe this just speaks to the nature of the country right now. A lot of times these sessions are happening after some big event, right? And it ends up being a really emotional space. Can you tell me a little bit about how it was navigating that for the first time? Because mm-hmm. I know y'all have been in organizing work, but as sort of the, you know, figurehead in your own space and creating that space, can you tell me about how that was and navigating that?
I mean, I can talk about that a little bit, and I'm sure you can with regards to the racial justice platform development. I wasn't as involved in that as Issa was, but have been involved with an amazing group of people in Bridgeport working to respond to the killing of Jason Negron mm-hmm. by Bridgeport police. And, you know, it's hard to overstate the amount of emotion that comes up in that space because, I mean, I think it's easy sometimes, or I don't know if easy, but it's tempting to do the work and kind of disconnect from the emotion of it and the grief of it. And, you know, holding space for the organizing work and the technical sort of like, this is what we do, this is how you have the action, this is how you build strategy, but then also holding space for healing and holding space for grieving because, and holding space to not forget that we're gathering because a 15-year-old was shot, handcuffed, and left to die in the streets of Bridgeport. It's hard to hold all of that, but it's also important to mm-hmm. not lose sight of that. And mm-hmm. so part of the way that we've responded to that is also just in organizing a little bit differently than, you know, how I was even trained to organize, and holding space for, you know, the family. So, you know, I want to, like recognize, and, you know, I can't say enough wonderful things about Jason Negron's sister, Jazz, who has been a major leader in the work, and has organized, especially like these memorial actions that have been happening, or really like memorial, gatherings at the spot where Jason was killed. There's a memorial that was set up. And so, you know, holding space for us as a community and for the family to gather and to remember Jason and to mm-hmm. tell stories about him and to talk to his friends and connect with them about how they're feeling, you know, even if they're not coming to the regular meetings, like to just be able to connect with them and support, you know, their efforts. Cause there's the organizing resistance, and then there's the everyday resistance of the people mm-hmm. who loved him, you know, making sure that his name is not forgotten. And I would say it came up in a big way during our conference last weekend, not this weekend, the weekend before, in the very last session that we had, we were actually joined by Chris Desir from People Against Police Brutality, and their organization has been really, really involved all over the state in doing this important police anti-police brutality work for years. And so they came and spoke about the work that they've been doing in the statewide context. And then we did a slideshow and talked about like sort of the history of the campaign work, what happened to Jason. We talked about his life and who he was, like what we knew about that. We talked about the memorial and how, you know, it was built and then it was rebuilt on his birthday. And then 4 days later, it was dismantled, we believe, by the city of Bridgeport. Everything was taken down. It was rebuilt. Someone poured old motor oil on it. It was cleaned up and rebuilt again. So just like kind of telling all those stories about like, this is what happened. And, you know, I would say for me, I was actually surprised by the amount of emotion in the room, which I shouldn't have been. And so I was like, you know, how can we, you know, hold space for this? And we were lucky because, you know, we were at the conference and the conference was all about organizing and liberation, was also all about healing and community. And, you know, folks listening probably may or may not know Hanifa was there and led a closing session with us, partly as a way for us to just like release some of that, what was coming out of the room, because everybody kind of went downstairs with a certain energy and tenor, came up yeah. with a whole other something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and our children were there. And I remember we were like in a circle doing a closing. And our two girls and another little girl who's the daughter of somebody else we work with were just kind of spinning in the middle of the circle, just spinning around in circles. And so there was this like
just being free spirited.
Yeah, there was just sort of like way in which the energy of children in the space, even though, you know, we didn't want them necessarily in the room when we were talking about this really difficult thing because they're very young, but just having them there and having them close by is also kind of keeping us whole
yeah.
as a community and as people. And so they bring an important energy to this space, and having space to talk about our feelings and have feelings mm-hmm. and sit in a room together and cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think is really important to the work,
right.
as is important to also go to the Bridgeport Police Department and go to the mayor's office
yeah.
and, you know, let them know that we are not going to forget that this terrible thing happened and that they did this terrible thing.
So how was it for you, though, kind of, so in your past work before you were sort of your own boss, how was it for you making that transition from, you know, not necessarily being the person, being one of a team of, you know, however many people devising the strategy and executing on that, to being one of the two people or one of the few people devising that strategy and being, you know, sort of responsible for the direction of it?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I would say for me, it's actually kind of more collective than some of my previous.
Oh, yeah.
And is
roles.
That sort of what you needed?
I would agree with that. Yeah.
It is, but it's something that's taken some getting used to.
Yeah.
You know, one of my previous jobs was at the ACLU of Connecticut, and I was a statewide organizer.
Mm-hmm.
The only organizer. Of a staff of 8, so very understaffed organization. I was trying to do like way too much across the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like the organizing department. If there was like an organizing department,
yeah,
it was me, like across the state.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with support of the rest of the staff and even like ACLU national staff for like guidance and resources, like a lot of my work was, you know, solo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, but, you know, working with the members is great. But I think with CT Core and our emphasis and growing emphasis and focus on community, it just feels like way more collective.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as we're growing and more of our membership is like kind of stepping into their leadership roles. Our last two chapter meetings last week, one in Bridgeport, one in Hartford, were both kind of, you know, agenda set meeting completely led by our members. And mm-hmm. I was kind of there to offer up some, you know, different pieces of like connecting
yeah.
the local chapters to other stuff happening organizationally, to the platform, kind of filling in little gaps. They were small gaps. And that is kind of different for me, but it also kind of frees up space because CT Core is doing so much to focus on some other things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want our chapters to be. And I would also say the kind of intersecting of like the personal and professional, I think is way more pronounced in CT Core because we are like fighting for our lives and like our kids being in the center of that circle. Like our mm-hmm. work is for me in a very personal way, kind of centered on them and their future and yeah. building for their future and yeah. building community
mm-hmm.
to hold them so they could be in liberated spaces. Mm-hmm. And like that is a perfect example of like materially, like what that looks like yeah. to have a space where they can kind of be free and be themselves. And you have a community of grown people giving them like constant affirmations,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that to me is just great for their own development.
Yeah.
And so I want to have spaces like that where I can continue to bring them. And like, you know, our conference was all weekend. And so after Saturday, both kids were like, you know, they wanted to go back Sunday, you know? So like they wanted to go back to that space.
Yeah.
And then I had a meeting Monday and Yvonne was like, you know, can I come to your meeting Monday night? And I almost brought her, but then I was just kind of like, you know,
it's a lot,
you know, bedtime yeah. and all of that. But we want them to be part of this work and we want them to have space where they go to, where people see them and see like all of them, you
yeah.
know, that's really what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, but there's challenges too.
Organizing when, yeah. when they get to that age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would say it's also been a little bit of a transition for me because I had experience at kind of isolation at organizations before. I actually ran an organization several years ago when I was in my early 20s. And that organization, there were times when I felt like, you know, there was a lot on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had a community of people who were on our board, who are our leaders. Hey, shout out to Teach Our Children and Youth Unleashed members, past, present, and future. But yeah, it was an amazing team to be a part of. But there are times when, like, you know, I have felt isolated in organizations. And so, you know, CT Core is definitely like a community energy. My struggle around that is I have a tendency to try to do it all myself
yeah.
and not to like be open about, hey, I'm burning out. Hey, I'm tired. Like, I need to take a step back here and there, because also the work always feels so urgent and important. Mm-hmm. And how dare you take a break mm-hmm. when these terrible things are happening? And in the last like month or so, I came to a point where I was like, you know, I'm really pushing myself way too hard. So let me have an honest conversation with the team and let them know where I'm at and like that I'm here and I'm not going anywhere, but this is kind of where I'm at, and was really overwhelmed by the response. People were like, yes, you know, you deserve to take some time off. We got this. And they led the meetings, you know, with, you know, minimal support from me. You know, I was always available to them, but they went and like they did that.
Are you talking about the week you were on vacation?
The week I was on vacation, but actually there were a couple of weeks, I think it was like a couple of weeks prior to that, that mm-hmm. I took just that night of the mm-hmm. meeting off because I was just, you know, tired. And yeah. I was like, I really can't go all the way to Bridgeport tonight. If I'm being really honest with myself, it's not healthy for me to not be like home and resting right now. And people were just very open to that. And so I think even, you know, there's something about how we're building CT Core as well, not just for me and Issa, but to be a space where we can also be honest about like our humanity, like
and what you need.
We're, yeah. You know, people get tired, mm-hmm. you know, and there's enough of us, there's enough of a community and enough capacity. Like we work with, I want to really state this, like we work with really brilliant, amazing. Strong, dedicated yes. people, like, yeah. and some of whom we've been friends with for years, some of whom we're just meeting. But just like, we could not be more blessed with the community that we're working with. And so, you know, part of that is also us trusting ourselves and trusting them enough to take a step back and to let others lead. And when we do that, like, it's amazing. Like, people just yeah. really step up and make things happen. You know, so I think it's something that a lot of leaders struggle with, you know, and it's a hard thing. I mean, I think the first time I remember that happening when I was at Teach Our Children, it was, we had a campaign for, translation services in the mm-hmm. schools, which, if you ever go into a New Haven public school and you see those signs that say, if you need a translator, talk to so-and-so, that was part of, the work that, Spanish speaking parents in New Haven did in 2009, 2010. And
I just want to shout out to Danny Diaz, who does an amazing job translating all the material.
Shout out to all the translators. and so we were, we actually had this huge action. I think it was one of the biggest actions we'd ever had at the Board of Ed. And it was, like, the first and only time, I think, we were covered by the television news.
Oh.
And that week I got swine flu. And I'm, like, the only person I know who got swine flu, because I catch everything.
You're the only person I know.
Don't get it. It was terrible. But I was sick. And my doctor was like, you know, you have to stay home and quarantine yourself for 10 days. And I was like, what do you mean? I have to go to work. I've got this big action. He was like, no, you got to stay home.
You're like, I don't have 10 days.
Yeah. And, you know, at that point we had paid staff and folks who, you know, had been trained as organizers. And, you know, I called them up and I was like, okay, here's the situation. And they led and organized an amazing, successful action without me. And it was, like, the proudest moment in my career. I was like, wow, like, I don't have to do it all. Like, like, these folks have got this. And so I think it's an amazing moment when you're leading an organization or you're working with a team to be able to go, oh, these folks really have this. And, like, I'm here, but, like, to not overinflate your importance in the work, but to also recognize your importance, but to not overinflate that and let that like trounce other people's leadership.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, for you guys over the last, 18 months, you've been able to sort of see it sprout from, you know, a vision in your head to a strategy on paper to a team. I keep hearing you say team. Mm-hmm. How many people do you guys have working with you now?
Oh, good Lord. I don't even know. In Bridgeport alone, we've got a pretty active group of, like, between 10 and 15 people, I would say, who come with some regularity and are taking leadership roles in Bridgeport alone. And, like, for the Police Accountability Network. So nice. We also have a Bridgeport chapter.
Yep. Which has a handful of awesome leaders. Right. You know, we have probably 5 to 10 dedicated Hartford members who are, right, you know, been involved with the chapter since the beginning. Waterbury is going to be launching, you know, by the end of the year, probably mm-hmm. by the end of November. But we have kind of a dedicated group of folks there who have been really interested in this idea of a Waterbury chapter since mm-hmm. the summer. And there's probably half a dozen of them who have been coming out in the meantime, when there's no Waterbury chapter, like, coming to CT Core events all across the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a core member of young people in New Haven. But, like, beyond that, once the New Haven chapter
shout out to Jay-Z
drops, there are just so many folks in the greater New Haven community who have been supporters of CT Core. Yeah. And I imagine that chapter
People have been demanding a New Haven chapter.
Yeah,
we're like, we're
that chapter
is
going to explode.
But I think, we don't start chapters unless mm-hmm. there's, like, a group of people who are like, we want this. Like, we're not trying to ride into your town and start a chapter against your will. So, you know,
you're not trying to colonize.
No, and that's a prerequisite. Like, you know, okay, there are people here. They want this. Let's provide the support. I mean, we've been talking about, as this organization develops as well, can we create a toolkit or something so that people can start chapters in their area with our support, but that there's, you know, some, like, information about how you do that and some tools for people to use. I think one of the things that I learned as an organizer is also that, you know, to start organizing work in any community, you don't need 100 people or 300 people. You need a small group of dedicated people mm-hmm. who are willing to sit down and talk about, like, what is the strategy for getting those 100 or 300 people, you know? That's where you start. And so if I'm ever, you know, in a community and they're like, we want to do X, but we only have 4 people, I'm like, that's awesome. That's great. You got 2 more people than you need. So, so, you know, let's sit down and figure out, like, how do we get the rest of those folks? And I mean, and that's another thing that I have, like, part of what called me into this work as well is, like, just seeing frustration among fellow organizers that, like, you know, people don't show up, and why don't they show up, and where are they? And so, you know, for us to really be having conversations about, like, how do we get people in the room?
Yeah.
You know, and how do we focus on the people who are here now and build that out so that it grows? And so at the conference, we had a workshop on base building, which I did with Z-Bell. Hey, Z, if you're listening, which was great. And we just had a conversation among, you know, other things about, you know, what are people doing, what's working and what's not working, and how can we, you know, bring more people in? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of my goals ultimately in this work is to just, you know, rather than worry about who's not showing up or, you know, working really hard to kind of convince people that they should join our work, is to just build a movement that's irresistible.
Yeah.
You know, something that, like, where there's a team and they go to, and I got to be a part of that, because, like, all these amazing people are there and I want to know them and I want to be a part of that, and, you know, let people come, you know, because they want to be there.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of just wanting to be there, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay, and we're talking about what we do for work and what keeps us motivated to do so. Huge thanks to Issa and Kamel for joining me today. I do have a couple extra questions before we wrap up the talk today. What has been, I'll say, let's start with the most challenging thing for you in transitioning to a 9-to-5 to a, you know, 24/7? And what's been the easiest thing?
Mm. That's the most challenging thing is time.
Yeah.
And it's also like, I'm like the worst boss I ever had. Like, to be honest, like, I feel like, you know, it's
easy. Are you saying you're hard on yourself?
I'm very hard on myself. Yeah. And I work myself too hard. But, like, you know, you work for other organizations and there's, like, you know, expectations about, you know, when you'll come in and when you won't come in. The 9-to-5, like, going home at 5 o'clock is awesome. And, you know, when you're doing work that you really love and really care about, like, for me, like, my tendency is to really throw myself way too deeply into it and mm-hmm. to just do too much. So that's been challenging for me personally, is just sort of like managing my workload and, you know, then again, like, I'm a mother, so I've got children as well. So just like being more reasonable with myself and being a better boss to myself.
Yeah. I think, what's the easiest?
I was going to say, you didn't drop what the easiest was.
What the easiest thing is?
The easiest is being hard on herself, I guess.
No. Well, yes, it's super easy to be hard on myself. No. Wait, skip me. I'm going to think about that.
All right. Well, I was going to say, for me, the easiest is just like knowing that we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That this is what needs to be done. You know, I feel very much like wholly in my purpose. And that's a very like liberated feeling. Like, this is what I was meant to do. This is what I've been waiting.
Is that wholly to do with a W?
With a W.
Okay.
Yeah. Completely, fully in my purpose. And it's something that I've like literally saw myself doing since I was a kid. Knowing that, like, I was reared to be a leader in racial justice work and continuing the work for our collective, you know, Black people and people of color, and ultimately, like, this nation's like real liberation. And I think on the other side of that coin is probably what's been most difficult is the balances around, like, understanding what that means, what that liberation means.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's this paradox, right? We talk about in some of our freedom dreaming spaces about, like, part of the conditions for liberation is being able to stand in all of our identities. And, like, mm-hmm. I talk about how so much of my identity is wrapped up in organizing and activism. It's just, mm-hmm. like, all of me, mm-hmm. you know? But it's all of me because, like, that work is necessary. If we didn't have to deal with oppression and fighting oppression, and we didn't need to do the work of liberating ourselves, then who would I be?
Right.
Like, who, what would I fall into?
What's underneath all
that? Yeah. What's underneath all that? And so am I kind of getting stuck mm-hmm. at that piece?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that, like, kind of a necessary thing to get and then get to the other side?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I do struggle with, is it really liberating to, mm-hmm. you know, be, like, in the depths of this work to the degree that I am, that we are?
Yeah.
Or am I kind of fooling myself in the meantime to get me through it because it's necessary to get through it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, but even like getting through it, like, what you know, like we're conscious as we're building an organization that's, you know, we want to be a big, powerful organization. Like, how are we wielding that power? Like, how do we show up? Mm-hmm. And like all the things that are connected to that, like how are we creating like equitable spaces? Like, mm-hmm. how am I showing up? Like, mm-hmm. that's a constant, mm-hmm. constant struggle mm-hmm. around kind of liberation mm-hmm. that I understand it to be, but like, or like, but is it actually like, what is the really truth mm-hmm.
behind that? Yeah.
And you know, I dig through that, but it is like a constant kind of struggle within the struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think, so I have an answer.
All right.
And I also want to comment on what you just said, because it reminds me of something that Anru said, Anru Halfkenny, who did some sessions at the conference as well, about organizers' tendency to build liberation movements that are not for us, like that are not for the people organizing it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to work really hard
to get
for
you
this
the
liberation.
Thing that you
need. Y'all enjoy that. Mm-hmm. But I'm over here exhausted, throwing every piece of myself into building this thing. And so the challenge that I'm hearing from Anru too is like, how do we build liberation movements that include us, the organizers and the people who are leading the work in that vision of liberation now, so that we're not burning ourselves out? In terms of like what's been easiest, I would say surprisingly, it's been finding the people and the capacity to do the things that need to be done.
Mm.
So, you know, there's like, if you look at our website and you learn about our work, like it's kind of hard to say what CT Corps does, because we do a lot. And we have a three-pillared approach. So community organizing, community building, and training. And, you know, finding people who have the skills to offer the trainings that people need has been shockingly easy. There's tons of capacity, and not, you know, not
that's
going
actually
to,
what you people usually say is the hardest thing for like getting their startup going, finding the resources.
Right. And because we're looking at the people who like nobody looks at, like we're looking at the people whose skills often get overlooked, and they're, you know, they're sitting there with these skills and are really hungry to offer that. So we just, you know, kind of make that invitation. We have a training team that is, I think, six people, something like that. And when I reached out to each of the, you know, I put a list together of folks that I wanted on the training team. Mm-hmm. I had to kind of cut the list down because there were so many people that I wanted to ask. And the people that I asked all said yes. And then somebody else like came through to our house, and I was telling them about what we were doing. And they were like, I need to do that. I need to be a part of that. And they had all of these skills that were like, that we didn't have, that were so necessary. And awesome. So it was just like, yeah, come on in, let's do this. And so like just finding the people to do that work, to lead political education, to, you know, think about community capacity, right? We wanted to create community care teams, and mm-hmm. we had some sessions, some forums on the different issues in our platform. And at the Health Equity Forum, there was a conversation about creating structures and institutions that could provide support to the community that are not funneling people into the criminal justice system or tearing families apart. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was a hypothetical conversation. And afterwards, somebody, Sarah, walked up to me and was like, I'm dead serious. Like, we're going to do this. Right. And I was like, OK. And then I met, you know, six other people were like, you know, what would be great if we had like some kind of, and it was basically, you know, a community care team. So. Yeah. I just was like, hey, you guys want to get on a Google Hangout and like talk about this? And now that work is going. So it's really just like there are people all over the state who have this vision, and mm-hmm. it's a shared vision. So, you know, and that to me also tells me about just like, this is what we're meant to be doing right mm-hmm. now. Like, not just me and Issa, but all of us, like we're meant to be coming together right mm-hmm. now and doing this work. Because the capacity is just, it's just there, it's just available, and people are really excited. And, you know, we try to provide stipends when we can, but the number of people who are like, literally, you don't need to pay me, like, I'm happy to volunteer to
That's
do this.
Awesome.
We had a whole huge team of people, many of them from Surge New Haven, who provided childcare at our conference free of charge.
Wow.
You know, so we're happy to hold that space for parents to
right,
be a part
to make
of that
it
conference.
Possible.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, the just generosity and capacity of the community is overwhelming.
We have a comment on Facebook from Gletty who says,
hey, Gletty.
Yeah. she actually goes, hey, Mercy, I thought that was you.
I was like, that's Donnie's, right?
She said she's actually having trouble sustaining herself, but also being accountable in the movement. So can y'all talk a bit about like the sustainability piece of getting a movement going or getting your own thing going?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, because in the spaces that I'm in, we talk about this all the time about how I want to be able to do this thing that I'm passionate, I'm worked up about, but I also have to put, you know, I don't want to say food on the table because I don't have any kids, but you know, I also have to eat and pay my bills and make ends meet. So mm-hmm. how'd you make that work for y'all?
Ooh, it's been a struggle. I'm not gonna lie.
I think part of it though is it's all the movement, you know. It's like taking care of yourself is part of the movement, right? Mm-hmm. So like kind of building on what Kamel was saying, you know, building on what Anru was saying is like our liberation and experiencing that is part of the movement. Mm-hmm. And the community care teams, which part of that work is going to be about meeting the immediate needs of people, mm-hmm. which might not look like the usual like undoing systemic racism organizing, mm-hmm. Which in some traditional like schools of thought in organizing is not organizing and is not as important as organizing. Mm-hmm. Kind of talking about like direct service, meeting people's needs. People's immediate needs also need to be met. And that's also part of the movement. I think we're talking about it in a different way, which is kind of like trying to get outside of the oppressive systems as much as possible to meet those needs. But like, that's all, I think that's part of it, right? I don't want to kind of minimize the challenges and sustaining yourself and being part of the movement. But I think part of it is understanding that whatever it is to sustain yourself is part of the movement, because you need to be sustained.
Yeah.
And that kind of like, to me, kind of brings me back to my personal paradox is like, a lot of the folks in the community do sustain me in the work. And so it feels good and liberating to be in the work, mm-hmm. but, I don't know. Am I limiting kind of like my concept of like liberation mm-hmm. that is only because I enjoy it and feel so drawn to like that part of the work is the organizing and the institution building and the system building, and not so much the experiencing, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like, I'm challenged too. Like, am I missing out on something by not experiencing, you know, what's typically thought of as self-care and things like that? Or is like in the work I'm feeling cared for, is that adequate? Yeah. And I like really don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I mean, I would also say like, I don't know if I have the answer to that, because I share those feelings. Mm-hmm. And thank you for asking that question. And I think like when I don't have the answer, sometimes I'm just like, I wonder who else is asking this question.
Right.
And getting those folks together in a room can sometimes be really generative. And often like you'll be like, oh, okay, so individually we can't sustain ourselves, but maybe if we create a circle of organizers or a circle of freedom fighters who are doing this work and we're all experiencing similar challenges, mm-hmm. we can pool resources and support each other better. Or, you know, just like think through like changes to our workflow. You know, it's hard to also answer the question without knowing specifically what kind of sustaining work needs to be done.
But
at the conference, we, you know, we did a training on fundraising, which was, you know, really aimed at organizations like ours that challenge authority. And mm-hmm. so it's not the typical kind of fundraising. You know, if you're fundraising for puppies and babies, really easy to get, you know, money, more easy, I should say, to get that money. And you're not upsetting anybody. You're not challenging anybody. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're doing this kind of work, you know, you need to know if the person giving you money is going to be contacted by the person you're trying to hold accountable.
Right.
And if the rug is going to be pulled out from under you. And so something that I think I've been really proud of that we've done this year is building a very robust donor base, like of mm-hmm. people who understand our work, who are invested in our work and who want to support us. You know, with a financial contribution, which range from $5 to $20,000, right? And so, you know, I do trainings on that, and I'd be happy to talk more with you about that, Letty. And also, you know, I'm going to be doing more trainings on that in the future. So, you know, because that's something I really am invested in doing for grassroots groups, especially, is providing training so that if the foundations are not providing support, that we can together figure out how to get it where it needs to go, because supporting CT Corps is great. Awesome. Please do it. Go on our website. But also there's a movement that exists beyond our organization, folks that are involved in our organization as well, that also really deserve to get fund. And if Gladys is who I think she is, she's with Black Lives Matter New Haven, and donate to them too, because they're amazing. So, you know, how can we be supporting organizations that, you know, are doing this amazing work, but maybe don't have the access that, you know, Issa and I have, like, to these foundations. Right, and once you get that donor base up, you can sometimes get the attention of foundations. Like, my recommendation is always, pick foundations that understand your work and fund the kind of work you do,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, kind of, you know, can fund a piece of your work. But be mindful, if you think that that organization might pull the rug out from under you someday, be prepared to lose that funding,
right.
You know, because it when it starts compromising your work, it's like there's no point in getting the money in the first place.
Right. So I want to end the show with two questions. And you can answer like, you know, word association or the first word that comes into your head, or you can go into a little bit more depth. One, what gets you worked up? So y'all have been doing this for almost 2 years now, right? Mm-hmm. What gets you worked up still as this work continues? What keeps you passionate? What keeps you motivated to move? And then finally, what work advice would you give individuals trying to break out and sort of meet a need in a place where a vacuum enters?
What gets me worked up are my kids, you know, like this work, I feel very connected to like our ancestors, and we name that in our platform that, you know, their struggle for liberation is our struggle for liberation. It's the same struggle. And so I want to complete this fight. I want our people to be fully liberated. And I would say, like, it's not cliche to like start with your vision, start with what you're passionate about, and try to figure out how to materialize that. Like, we're happy to talk offline with folks who want to continue that conversation.
Yes, reach out to us. I would say, like, sometimes what gets me worked up is just like the possibility of like what the vision of like what is possible,
mm-hmm.
like just seeing the amazing capacity of our community and our world and how it's just being wasted. And we're, instead of, you know, reaching our full potential as a species, for example, we're fighting each other and oppressing each other and killing each other. And that makes me mad as well. And I think about the future of our children. Like, I would love for my children to not have to be organizers because, you know, they're free, you know, but I do think that they'll need to keep up the struggle to protect that freedom. And my advice to folks would be, you know, listen to Issa Rae, find your people who are around you. You know, you don't necessarily need to look upward for support. There's more capacity in your community than you probably realize, and reach out to CT Core.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you again for joining me, Issa.
Yeah, thank you.
Kamel, thank you so much. And remember, work hard, play hard, and tune in next week to figure out how to work it out. Rip up in this car. Plus I'm out this world, girl, you know I'm a star. Used to buy rounds, but now we buy the bar. Last year they had to ask, now they know who we are. Boss tip, walk in the building, I own it. Can tell by who I'm on the phone with. Yeah, young and talk about grown biz. Many too busy jacking my swag. Need to mess around, get your own fit. Get your own cars, get your own clothes. Get your own chick. You ain't rapping my game, get your own click. The bigger the bill, the harder you fall. Mine. Cause my money long. The quicker you're here, the faster you go. That's why where I come from, the only thing we